Attorneys may notice there are only two of us up here. Judge Owen has been here the first 2 days, and today she is feeling ill. It's easy for somebody who's not feeling ill to say it's not that serious. I think it is probably serious for her, but she will recover, but not in time for today's argument. So we will proceed with the two of us. We will not decide these cases as a quorum. She will listen to the arguments and otherwise fully participate when she is physically able. We have five cases today. The first one is U.S. v. John Terrell, 11-50602. Ms. Ferguson-Gilbert, we'll hear from you.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. It is a privilege to be here today. My name is Catherine Ferguson-Gilbert, and I represent the appellant, John Terrell. We live in a digital world today driven by technology involving the use of family and friends' computers, user names and profiles, various email accounts. Sometimes we log on to computers using other people's usernames to check our email, to surf the web, to update Facebook, and to work. Sometimes we even use other people's credit cards online. In fact, that was the case in this particular case where the appellant's son, whose name is also John Terrell, used his father's credit card to buy the second laptop at issue here that contained child pornography and to go online and register that computer using his own college email account. Some people even create false profiles online and false identities. And Agent Baskerville, the government's expert in this case, testified that one can register a computer to anyone. So the evidence that the appellee is pointing to that somehow ties my client to possession of child pornography merely because these two computers were registered in his name in part, as well as the son's name and the wife's name, is not sufficient evidence in this case.
Counsel.
Yes.
In this case, though, didn't the son and the other people that might have had access at different times deny that they were involved in these photographs?
The son did, in fact, deny that at trial, but many defendants and many people that are accused deny their guilt. However,
that's not a difference. I mean, the jury had that before. I mean,
they
it's
did.
It's not a case where you have joint custody and in other cases where no one testifies or no one, the state didn't put anybody on to deny it. My understanding, the people that would have had access to the laptop and the other instrument at the critical times were excluded by their testimony.
The government pointed out, the appellee in this case, that the wife of my client had testified, and that is not accurate. There was testimony through one of the police officers in this case that when asking my client's wife whether she had access to the computers, she said she did, but one of the computers actually belonged to John Terrell, my client.
What do you do with the testimony of the victim that the defendant in this particular case had her participate and do this stuff and then told her shortly thereafter that he had deleted it? Isn't that some kind of indication or admission or evidence that he was the one that did it?
I think that some evidence that a rational jury could find that he was in knowing possession. However, there's a lot of other evidence in this case, and I think it's too simple to conclude that just because Mr. Terrell's son said that he didn't take these images of his daughter and that he said that he didn't put these other 751 pornographic images on the computer, that that's entirely accurate. There was, in this case, a total absence of proof connecting my client, with the exception of the evidence that you just mentioned.
Counsel, let me ask you, you're talking about the sufficiency of the evidence now, and that is certainly an issue that's been raised. But you're focusing on, if I'm not mistaken, who placed these images after they were taken by the defendant onto the computer. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and that that evidence ties back to basically who was in knowing possession of these images.
Okay, well, looking at how this went to the jury instructions that were not objected to, not the later response to the jury note, but the jury instructions that were not objected to, I don't see where the jury was told, which may be why they sent the note later, that they had to find that your client was the one who downloaded them. They had to find he was the one who took the pictures, and that they had to be produced, which included in the definition being placed on the computer. But I don't see where the instructions require them to find that. Would you agree that the original instructions did not require jurors to find he was the one who produced the pictures on the computer?
I would agree with that, and I believe that you're addressing my argument with regard to the sexual exploitation, essentially the evidence that showed that my client induced or enticed ST, the minor in this case, for the purpose of producing the images. And I will concede that this court has held in U.S. versus Dixon, essentially copying those images to another device constitutes production, essentially by reproduction, such that the state wasn't required to prove the actual camera, you know, the actual original production of these images. So I will concede that. I intend to focus my argument primarily on the charge of knowing possession of child pornography in this case. And the focus by the government at the trial and the focus in their brief seems to be directed towards the 751 images. And there was a lot of evidence to show that the son actually admitted he did business for his father. He came to the residence. He had access to the residence. He actually was the owner of the trailer where laptop number 2 was found. And
the father of the victim, find. When you said computer number 2, which ones did he discover, according to his testimony, and turn over to law enforcement?
He's the one that actually discovered both of the computers that were purportedly secreted. And the government points out that the fact that they were secreted somehow ties my client to knowing possession. However, when the first search warrant was conducted, the police were specifically looking for this type of evidence and didn't find it. And then his son, John Terrell, went to the residence, went to the very cabinet where the laptop number 1 was located and, quote, found that laptop, and went to the trailer that he was preparing to occupy, that the son was preparing to occupy, and the son owned that trailer. He went to that trailer, and despite law enforcement testifying at trial that it was so cluttered that they did not find laptop number 2, he's the one that actually located laptop number 2.
Where the quotes that you're making with your fingers that won't show up on the audio of this, I take it that you're disputing that that's what happened, but it seems to me what you're talking about are jury arguments that were explored to the extent Mr. Martinez or whoever was presenting this to the jury. And where is there an absence of evidence on which jurors could rely, not the presence of evidence that might have convinced them otherwise?
I think you find the absence of evidence compared to all of these other cases where there's not any proof of any usernames that specifically connect my client to the pornography. Several of these cases involve usernames where the law enforcement had to go on to separate accounts. Like there was one that involved a man that had a computer at his office. I believe he was a dentist or something. I don't recall the name off the top of my head. But on his user profile, all of the pornography was connected to him. On another one, the police actually went in and searched a computer that belonged to a husband and wife that had different user profiles. And immediately on switching from one logon to the other, to the husband's, child pornography started popping up. So those are the type of connections that are absent in this case. Also, there have been several cases that have actually involved emails. So proof that there's some type of email that connects the client, the appellant, the accused, to the pornography. And that has been in several of these cases, like in the Goff case, the government cites that case. There was evidence in that case that the defendant was emailing child pornography. In one of the other cases, it involved 75 images that the defendant emailed to himself, and that was linked to him.
And are you still talking about the possession count?
Yes. Focusing entirely on the possession charge. I think the other issues can really be decided from the brief.
Well, counsel, what about what we're looking at, if there's some evidence in the record, and you, I think we're saying there's none, but this is not a case in which there's any, there's always doubt, I guess, but where the evidence is quite strong, this is a case in which the evidence is quite strong that your client, the grandfather, took the pictures, pornographic pictures of his own granddaughter. And that, and it seems to me, in itself, is some sort of circumstantial evidence he's interested in such things and could well be the one, if there's a dispute that jurors have to resolve, that gives some credibility to the resolution by the jury that he is the one who had this on the computer. I mean, isn't that very strong circumstantial evidence if there's absence of other evidence?
I think that's strong circumstantial evidence. However, the jury seemed to question that. One of the jury notes specifically was asking the question of whether they have to prove, and this relates to the child pornography case, whether they have to prove who knowingly put the pictures on the computer. And by virtue of them asking that question, it's indicative of their questioning for over 3 hours.
Isn't that indicative, though, that they may have been concerned about the producing the first count, or the one involved the producing or creating, enticing to produce, as opposed to the one that you're talking about, which is possession?
In other words,
it wouldn't make any difference who produced it in terms of who possessed it on a computer, right? If a person possesses this stuff, knowingly possesses it on his computer, it doesn't make any difference who produced it, does it?
No, it does not, because someone could have another individual download the pornography onto the computer, and they could knowingly be in possession of the pornography. However, there's an absence of evidence to show that my client was knowingly in possession of the pornography. There weren't any, like these other cases that we've cited and the government cited, there weren't any admissions by my client. There weren't any fingerprints that tied him to CDs containing child pornography. There weren't any user names. There wasn't even any evidence of whether any usernames existed. And similar to one of the other cases, the expert came in and actually said, I have never examined a piece of medium like this where I have found it so completely devoid of any other user information.
How about evidence of software that would delete or make it difficult to find that these type of images had been deleted?
The government points that out as indicative of proof that my client was the one that put these things on the computer. But unlike the other cases involving that type of evidence, there was also circumstantial evidence in those cases to prove that the person admitted it or their passwords were connected. So there was some proof that type of program existed on the computer, but nothing specifically linking my client to having put that program there, knowing that that program existed, or having some password that was connected to his user account or otherwise connected to him. There was also no proof of any news groups that he belonged to where he could download this type of pornography, no proof of basically no proof that he was the only one in possession of these computers. And when, like this court has previously addressed this issue in Moreland, when you do not have exclusive possession of contraband, the child pornography, then there needs to be other links. And I would say that this court needs to come up with a rule to say that, again, if the defendant is not in exclusive possession of the pornography or the item that contains it, then the government must have affirmative links that otherwise connect that defendant to the illicit material in order to prove knowing possession.
What would you say to the evidence, circumstantial or otherwise, that he is the one, the defendant, who placed the picture of the granddaughter on the computer, because the granddaughter testified that the defendant told me he deleted it not long after he took it, and the forensic examination computer shows the picture of her was deleted from that computer, or a computer. You may distinguish the computers.
Close to the date where when the pictures were taken.
So corroborating what...
When it occurred and the deletion occurring about the time that she says that he told her that he was deleting it.
I think what I would say with that evidence is that the jury obviously questioned whether what the victim was saying was actually true, whether my client was the one who actually did that, because, again, the jury note asked, do they have to show that my client was the one who knowingly put those pictures on the computer, thus whether he was knowingly in possession of that, and relating back to whether they believed the victim in this case. Now, the government also wants to argue that the fact that there were 751 images is somehow indicative of the fact that he knew that his computer contained child pornography.
Counsel, why don't you pick up that thought on your rebuttal?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It is hard to see the light, I think.
Thank you.
Counsel, do you want to give us some more particulars on the possession charge, which seems to be the basic issue here?
Absolutely. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. This case is entirely different in terms of multi-access cases. And as y'all pointed out in some of your questioning, that the computer that contained the 751 images, there's two laptops. So we'll just focus on laptop number one, which contained the photos of the victim, ST, and 751 images.
Were the only photos of ST on that computer the ones that were deleted?
Yes, exactly. They were found in the trash bin.
Okay, and those were the only ones of her on that computer?
That's correct, okay, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And so we have a direct link between pictures that he took and child pornography stored on a computer he owned. There is very strong evidence.
Were there other trash bin deletions of other than the ones of the victim on the first count?
The record's not clear whether there were any other deleted files in the trash bin other than those of ST, but as you pointed out, it is very corroborative that those took the offense took place in the summer of 2003, and the photos were placed in the trash bin on June 7th of 2003, strongly corroborating ST's story that she told to the jury about how this happened and the fact that he had told her that he would delete them. In this case, there was never any evidence. In fact, the son was specifically asked, did you ever use either of these two laptops? And the answer he specifically said was no. And so this is not a case where we have multiple users, different accounts. The fact is, the laptop that contained 751 images of child pornography also contained the images of the granddaughter that the defendant took, which is a very strong linkage, and the fact that there was a floppy disk found in his home which contained references to child pornography websites and contained business letters signed by the defendant. So in addition to the circumstantial evidence that he took the pictures and therefore had an interest in child pornography, number two, we have direct evidence showing where his personal correspondence and references to child pornography were found on a completely unrelated item that was seized during the search of the home. And so all of these factors strongly link the defendant to this computer and these images. And as this court has recognized, there was no obligation that anyone prove who put the images there. The question is, did he knowingly possess the laptop which contained the images? And getting back to, you know, the jury note question, as I think was discussed earlier, the jury instructions that were never objected to specifically instructed the jury that there was no requirement that they actually have any evidence related to who put the images on the computer, and that is consistent with well-settled law, and that the court's instruction to the jury regarding, and it's important to note that the jury's question specifically referred to count one. There was never any discussion, and the court's response was limited to count one. So there was never any question that the court's instruction to the jury had any implication as far as count two.
With reference to count one, mm-hmm. Where you have to have the interstate nexus,
mm-hmm.
Was it the first laptop or the first computer that was in interstate commerce, or both of them, or where?
Both of them. There was evidence presented to the jury that both of the laptops were produced outside of the state of Texas and traveled in interstate commerce. And so, therefore, the mere act of reproducing those images onto the laptop satisfied the interstate commerce nexus. And as you are aware, there's three...
Does it have to be him? Does it have to be the defendant?
As we point out in the brief, there's a jurisdictional section that contains three different ways in which jurisdiction can be established. And in this case, under the second one, it uses the passive was produced without any requirement that the defendant be the one who actually produces them or places them on the computer.
But it has to be produced with that with the intent, doesn't it? With the
specifically,
not a specific intent, but with the there's something about. In other words, let's say I produce it, all right, and I just produce something, and then somebody comes along and puts it on some instrument that has gone. It's kind of like it's an inchoate offense. Am I now guilty because somebody comes in later on and puts it on a computer that's been traveled in interstate commerce?
The way the statute is written is that you...
Would I be guilty, even though
a person,
I haven't been in a... If the completion of the offense, maybe not even contemplated by me, doesn't exist until somebody else comes in and performs some act. I mean...
Actually, the language of the statute specifically requires that any person who uses, persuades, induces, entices, or coerces any minor to engage in any sexual explicit conduct for the purpose of producing. So as long as you had the intent, one had the intent...
So he's got to have that purpose.
Exactly. At the time the images were taken, and then subsequently they were produced when they were placed on the laptop, and there are cases that
well, but producing. Let me ask before you leave that first thought. It seems to me that getting to Judge Benavides' focus, which is certainly in this case, he doesn't have to have the intent at the time of taking the pictures that they be produced onto an instrument that's gone through interstate commerce, but he does have to have the intent of producing a visual depiction.
If
you had evidence that the camera had gone in interstate commerce, this would be. Whatever reason, maybe hindsight, or maybe you didn't have that evidence, you didn't. So the production is, if you've been able to show that the camera had been transported in, or had you shown that in interstate commerce, does that end it? Is that the production itself, the taking of the pictures?
If an instrumentality that had traveled in commerce were used in any way, whether at the time it was taken or subsequent production, either would satisfy the requirements of the statute. In this case, there was no camera recovered at the time.
Okay. Do we have to hold in this case, or is there some other basis, whether it's a waiver or something else, do we have to hold in this case that the person who took the pictures, the defendant, does not have to be the person who downloads onto a computer? And if we so held, would we be the first panel to hold that in this circuit?
Actually, I believe that many courts have addressed this issue at least indirectly by saying that there is no requirement that the person that production, if you look at the way the statute is written, it's passive in the sense that it specifically, if we turn to the jurisdictional section. The three prongs. The first one specifically requires that it be the person identified as having taken the pictures. However, the other two are written in a manner in which there is no requirement. It simply states that they must be produced. And that production certainly is not specifically linked to any individual person. And as we point out in the brief, it would create the absurd result that somebody could escape prosecution by simply never actually having been involved in the actual transfer. And so it would allow a mechanism in which certain individuals would be able to escape liability under the statute for the exact sort of crime that the statute was intended to cover. And so therefore, and of course there is a waiver, a plain error argument that we have stressed in our brief, that the objections made in the district court to the jury charge and to the note specifically, there were no objections to the jury charge as it went, but as specifically to the note, are quite different than those raised on appeal.
And well, so I was looking also at the motion for judgment of acquittal, and it really was just a generic motion without any any reference at all to specifics, much less the specifics that we're talking about now. So that's why I'm asking, do we actually need to hold that it's not necessary for you to have shown that the defendant, Terrell, is the one that downloaded onto the computer that was transported in interstate commerce?
Well, in other words, in this case, there's evidence that he was the one, didn't he?
There is evidence. There is, I believe,
circumstances. So we wouldn't have to say that you didn't have to prove that.
That's correct.
Well, but the jury was never told to find that. It's the problem. I would think that in this case, the jury did not find he is the person. They were told they didn't need to find. Correct?
Well, yes, that is correct, but they actually did have evidence from which they could find.
But they didn't. I mean, our review on appeal, we don't figure out what the jury necessarily could have found. It's what they necessarily did find, and they didn't find that.
Under a manifest miscarriage of justice standard, which would apply to a general Rule 29 as opposed to one that's specifically referenced, I think that this court could find that this conviction did not shock the conscience, and that, in fact, there was sufficient evidence, regardless of whether that needed to be.
Let's say, for purposes of this argument, what your position is, let's say a defendant paints a child in some sexually exploitive way and makes a painting of it. Sick guy, and he makes, you know, gets a little girl or whatever and makes this painting of it. And then person two comes in and sees the painting, takes a picture of it, and sends it on the internet. Do you have an offense?
If a minor child was used to create a visual depiction of a sexually explicit nature, I believe that would satisfy the first prong of the statute. And then the subsequent publication, and so,
the problem that I have is how far do we have to go in this opinion? Because I could see for perhaps there's really an offense would be totally dependent on a third party coming in that the principal person may not, the person that paints the picture may not even have contemplated or know it's going to happen.
Because actually, I believe under your scenario, if we look at the statute, it says for the purpose of producing any visual depiction, if that visual prediction was produced or transmitted using materials.
That's right.
That traveled.
Okay, so let's say I produce this, and it's a depiction, and it's exploitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then C walks into my house and sees it and says, oh, I like that picture. I'm going to send it to some friends. And I don't even know C. C just does it. Have I committed an offense? According to that literal way of looking at it, you would have an offense.
And
even though all my actions have been completed, I don't know about anything. There's been no offense committed.
Well,
under the statute, and all of a sudden, then I've committed this federal offense.
And the fact is, though, that the statute does require that the actor coerce, engage a minor for the purpose of making a visual depiction.
For the purpose.
And then, obviously, the way the jurisdictional hook is written, it does suggest, it says passively, if it was produced, and that is the exact language that's used. And as we point out, rules of statutory construction, where Congress actually requires in
what
one section.
We don't have that situation in this case.
We don't.
Okay. And now I'm just wondering how far down the line we have to go with your analysis and your argument, not to create a situation where we answer the question in the example that I just gave you.
Because in this case, I think that any courts, the holding this court could be limited to the facts of this case because they are rather suggestive of the fact that he took the pictures and the jury could rationally find whether they were instructed or not, and I don't believe it requires them to be, as it was done in this case, certainly without objection, that he is the one who placed those on the computer that were found in the deleted file folder around the contemporaneously about the time she testified that he said he had deleted them. So there's very strong evidence that suggests that, in fact, regardless of whether the theory is correct, and I think that because of the lack of objection to the court's charge, that in this case, this court could easily construct a holding that would be limited to the facts of this case and under the standard of review presented.
Well, Mr. Gay, you said earlier, not in your recent statements, that the jury was clearly told, and I'm using the wrong modifier, that they did not need to find that the defendant was the one who produced the pictures. Are you just relying on the way the elements of the crime were set out in the jury instructions, that they were never told they had to find that? I mean, as I read, I have the instructions here, and it first says you must find the defendant is the one who made this visual depiction. And then it says you must find either, and then there are three things set out. So is that what you're talking about? That's the section that clearly shows he did not need to be the one who produced the picture on the computer?
That's the way I would read that, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay.
And then I think that's the way, and if you look at the discussion, the government's position has always been that just because there's no proof that the defendant put them there doesn't mean it's not production. And I think that that's also sort of tied into this. And so in this case, there was certainly no requirement that they find that he be the one who put them there. And that was our position, and that's how the district court answered the question.
Didn't have that kind of, whoever's trying this, didn't have that kind of discussion when the jury instructions were being discussed prior to being given to the jury?
No, at that point it had never come up and was not an issue that had been developed the instructions, and I believe they're the pattern that has been consistently used in all of these cases that simply doesn't reference or address the issue of who does the production, as long as they were produced. And we have, a fairly persuasive argument that Congress intended this exact structure when it provided for three different jurisdictional hooks. And the first one requires specifically that it be the defendant, and the other two do not. And I think there's a pretty strong argument that they intended this to have a very broad scope. And there are passages in our brief where it's very clear that Congress wants to have a broad funnel to capture as much of this sort of conduct as it can, and I think that is specifically why it was written the way it was in the passive voice, was produced to enable a very broad application, and I think that the cases speak to that this was always intended to have a very broad sweep. If there are no further questions, I'll yield back my time.
Thank you, Judge Benavides. I think you raise a very important issue in this case, that essentially the way that the My client was charged in this case for sexual exploitation leads to absurd results like you've indicated.
The issue that I raised, did you raise it in your brief?
The issue that you raise is basically what I was getting to, the interstate commerce nexus, and that's the issue that you've brought up. And similar to the excitement case that this court also referenced in Moreland recently in a child possession of child pornography case, I think that you can use that case to find that the knowingly for the purpose of producing visual depictions of such conduct goes to the producing those on items that have been transported in interstate commerce, because if he were to basically take these pictures of his granddaughter on items that had entirely been produced within the state of Texas, such as a camera, and then someone else came along and took those photographs, and perhaps he intended to delete those photographs altogether on the camera, on any device that had never been transported in interstate commerce, then he would be guilty and be brought into federal court to face federal charges of possession of child pornography as opposed to state charges merely by virtue of the other person's activities.
Well, counsel, it wouldn't be only because of the other person's activity. It seems to me this is a matter of statutory interpretation. You're not making a constitutional argument or a due process argument, and so we need to interpret what this statute does. And seems to me an equally plausible, it's a policy decision reason, is if you are the kind of person who would take a visual depiction such as this, then you stand at risk that somebody will transmit that in interstate commerce or otherwise allow a federal crime to be made out of it by producing it on an instrument of interstate commerce. That is another way to interpret what they may have been thinking. But insofar as our chore, we need to figure out what they did and what these words mean.
Right.
Fair enough.
I understand that. And there's cases that have supported your argument and have supported the government's argument with regard to that, basically casting such a wide net that they're catching people like you're indicating who someone else actually goes on to produce the images, and that essentially they're just punishing the actual coercion or enticing of the minor for the purpose of producing images, period.
Well, the crime exists merely by using a camera that went in interstate commerce, correct?
Yes.
And so none of this dissemination is even a necessary element of the crime. So it's Congress looking for a way to latch on to a federal nexus.
It's the way that the government can use its, can circumvent the idea that this is a state police power of it because they're using an interstate commerce.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It's not a classic element of the offense. The offense is there, but the federal courts now have jurisdiction because of the jurisdictional.
Right. And I'd like to point out in this case, you mentioned the camera and equating it to that type of situation. In this case, no camera or other recording device was even produced. However, again, I recognize that case law has said that production by reproduction is enough. And essentially, there was proof in this case that the computer's laptop number one specifically had been transported in interstate commerce. I'd like to go back to the possession of the child pornography charge again and just clarify something that the appellee raised, and it is incorrect. Essentially, on cross-examination, the son, John Terrell, in this case, actually admitted to using his father's computers and even logging on to his father's email in order to conduct business for his father.
Well, he said he used it, but he specifically denied that he had anything to do with the production of these photos, right?
That's correct. And the government points...
How is that different from two people in the car, there's marijuana in it, and you have joint possession of the car, and one mistake puts on, or the government puts on a fellow that says, it wasn't mine, I didn't know about it, it belonged to him. And that's all you got. And if the jury believes that, haven't you excluded this other joint possessor, because the jury believed him that he didn't have anything to do with it?
No, Your Honor, because if a reasonable jury would not find the evidence sufficient beyond a reasonable doubt, then that's not enough.
And why? If I'm a juror and I say, I believe that guy, it was in this guy's car, this guy was in the car at the same time, He says he didn't have anything to do with it.
Essentially, there have to be, in those type of cases, Your Honor, affirmative links. And that's what I'm suggesting, that this court establish a rule clarifying what we mean by knowing possession.
Well, don't we have some affirmative links? We have his testimony by the son that he went with his dad to buy him this thing, that he didn't do it, that it was his dad that had these things. But don't we have links? Don't we have the little girl saying he told me that he deleted them, showing his link to this, and that there was actual deletion from the instrument that these images were on? Aren't those links?
Those are links, but I don't think a reasonable jury could find that they've proven their case beyond a reasonable doubt, especially in light of the fact that they question whether he reproduced it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both.
Counsel, I noticed that you're